It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru...
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Hello there, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey@WFYI.org. That's S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soce. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which I have a blog idea, Cobe.
Oh, okay.
And
I have an idea, too.
Great. We'll update it soon at...
Filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you just heard is the man who considers the song you're hearing now the second greatest funk instrumental ever recorded, right behind Pick Up the Pieces by the Average White Band.
Yep.
That's Cobe Slagle.
Mm-hmm.
And he is unanimous in that. Of course, you're hearing in the background Sissy Strut by the Meters. This was produced by the late, great Alan Toussaint. May he rest in peace. This man's music has appeared, well, besides become a part of music history, American music history, down in New Orleans with his producing, his writing, and his own performing. And, of course, Sissy Strut is used brilliantly in Quentin Tarantino's Jackie Brown.
Just another great reason to love Jackie Brown. As if you needed another.
Who, are you talking to somebody in particular?
Yeah.
We love you too, Bianca. But yeah, brilliant. We would recite lines from that scene. We cannot. But yeah, brilliant.
We're just going to Koreatown.
That's really about it. Anyway, brilliant use of that song, and salute to Alan Toussaint for all of his great music. And if you listen in on Saturdays, after you listen to the Cool Down, 7 o'clock, you can flip over to the Blues House Party at 8 o'clock, and most of the show tomorrow night will be devoted to Alan's music. So salute on that. Also want to say a big shout out and thanks to Richard Probst for filling in for me last week. And I know he also, we're going to shift gears here. I know he had some very lovely things to say about our colleague and friend Jim Mueller, who passed away 2 weeks ago. And I want to say, of course, Jim was a part of the Film Sociology family for a short time. He was he had the producer's chair before Cobe and helped out for a few months, and was also a guest on the show. And he'll definitely be missed on air as a professional, off air as one of the wonderful eccentrics here at WFYI. Dark sense of humor, love to speak. Spoke his mind if provoked, which is always a good thing. And his knowledge of sci-fi, love DC Comics, love the original Star Trek, a lot of 60s and 70s television and movies. So he was a great asset on both ends of the microphone and the board here at Film Sociology. Yep. So we raise a glass to you, Jim. Thank you so much. Okay. Of course, I was not on last week because I was doing a play at Earlham College. And with that in mind, there are films that have opened today, and I have seen none of them flat out. In fact, I'm prepared for next week's show, just not for this week's show. So we decided to catch up a little bit. What did Richard think of Spectre?
Liked it. Shane liked it.
Liked it, didn't love it?
Shane put it like this. If you're a Bond fan, and in particular of the Daniel Craig Bond franchise.
Correct.
you will be paid off for a lot of things with Spectre.
I agree with that. As I told Emma, by the way, Emma's birthday gift, well, one of her birthday gifts last week to the 14-year-old was we road tripped out to a suburb between Dayton and Cincy and saw an IMAX screening of Spectre last Saturday afternoon. Yeah, or as Jim Rome would say, worth it. Worth seeing on the big screen. And of course the D-bag answer I gave Emma is, you know, Skyfall has brought the Bond franchise to a whole new level because I thought Skyfall not only is the best made Bond film and one of the best Bond films, period, but I remember right, that was number two on my best of list that year. The only list I'm obligated to do. And
what was number one that year?
I think it was, if I remember right, it might have been All Is Lost, the Robert Redford film. Because Skyfall it brought it so high, I wondered if there was going to be a slight dip. And I guess there is, but still, it's a hell of a film.
Is it a lot of fun? Is it kind of like when Dark Knight Rises came out, our friend Jarrett Moore said, Dark Knight Rises was good where The Dark Knight was great.
I would say that Spectre is better than good.
Okay.
But I see the rationale where you're going. Is it as good as Skyfall? No, but it continues what in the path that Skyfall has created. There is a nice mixture of old and new. In fact, I saw some Australian blogger who pointed out just some of the homages to old Bond films from Spectre. And I mean, you have that in Skyfall, obviously. A great example is there's a fight between and Batista is in this. So we have former, I think is he retired from wrestling and fighting?
I don't know.
Dave Batista. You know who that is, right?
No.
Look him up. He's perfect. He has the odd job esque. You know, he's just a giant mass of muscle.
Dude.
He was in Guardians of the Galaxy, of course. He's hilarious in Guardians of the Galaxy. He has the role of just massive muscle going after James Bond. And there's a fight that they have, a very sloppy, ridiculous fight in a train. And, of course, when you have a fight in a train, you think of From Russia with Love with Sean Connery and Robert Shaw. It's also, of course, it's directed by Sam Mendes, who did the last film. Solid performances from everybody. I was pointing out to Kobe, there was a mini Inglourious Bastards reunion between Leah Seydoux, who plays the Bond girl, and Christoph Waltz, who's playing Blofeld. That's not really a surprise, because she was in the opening scene of Inglourious Bastards, as was, of course, the scene with Waltz going to the farmhouse. Mm-hmm. And we're still giggling. Emma and I are still giggling about Christoph Waltz. As you know, here, ladies and gentlemen, here at Film Sociology, we are pro Christoph Waltz.
Yes, yes, we are.
And the fact that he played Blofeld is inspired casting. And there's one scene in general that just tickles me because I can't wait to buy the Blu-ray. Yes, I will. Because they will discuss. Hopefully, they will discuss. There is a scene where Blofeld is torturing Bond. Again, this really shouldn't be a shock to anybody. It's the 50th year of Bond movies. But there is a scene where Blofeld is torturing Bond, and there's Christoph Waltz in the kind of the origins of the Nehru jacket, and the pants are slightly too short. They almost look like very fashionable clam diggers, and he's sockless. He's got slip-on shoes, and he's there, and he's got the damsel in distress next to him, and he's being menacing while rolling in an office chair. Like, Blofeld doesn't want to get up out of his chair to be menacing. He just, and I hope that's Waltz's, that was Waltz's idea. If not, Sam Mendes is an even better director. It is big. There's big action. Everything you want from a Bond film, it delivers. And the more nods and cookies to the past movies, you'll get those. Q is a little more of a smart aleck. We find out a little more of Moneypenny's background, although I never get enough Moneypenny. And not enough Monica Bellucci in this film, by the way, who, as I was talking with our colleague Carl, Monica Bellucci at age 50 is the oldest Bond woman in the history of the franchise. She has one really nice scene with Daniel Craig. She plays the widow of a criminal that Craig is chasing after. Know who second place is on the list?
Mm-mm.
At the time, 39 years old, Honor Blackman. Pussy Galore in Goldfinger. So chalk one up for the older ladies. That's cool. Anyway, I enjoyed it. Emma enjoyed it. And I would say the bigger the screen you can experience this at, the more enjoyable it'll be.
Yes, 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 yes!
Also in theaters, and I know it opened last week and Richard talked about it as well, is the film Room. Not to be confused with The Room, but this is...
Nope, nope.
Let's try this again. Kobe, are we talking about the film with Alison Brie?
Nope.
Actually, we are.
Yeah.
We're not talking about the Tommy Wiseau film.
No.
It's set in World War I.
Nope.
Sorry. We'll get to that. Anyway, this was a film that was the opening night film of this year's Heartland Film Festival. And stars Alison Brie, who I just saw this week in Trainwreck, which we'll get to in a little bit. But she and her son are basically locked in a room for the first 7 years of the child's life. Five years, I believe. And so there's the mother-daughter connection while being trapped in a room, and then which is fascinating and very claustrophobic and very effective. And then the second half, when they are finally released, when they finally escape, and then they become prisoners of their own home because of the media, and also trying to deal with their family. Of course, there's some nice supporting scenes from William H. Macy and Joan Allen. And the adjustment to regular life. It's almost two films in one, and it's really, really strong. And there's already talk, especially among the IFJA, of pushing Alison Brie for acting awards. And I hope that's the case. It's not a comfortable film, but it's a gripping one. So hopefully you folks can go check that out. You weren't ready.
Now that was a good movie.
It was a little better than good, but yeah, that's the sentiment. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we have an old segment that we're returning. Do you have your intro ready?
Oh, we're doing that now?
Yeah, we're doing that now. Because
that's usually in the second half.
I know, but we're catching up on new titles. Since we are catching up on new titles, which is the first half of the show material. But ladies and gentlemen...
Speaking of a new title...
We have a meteor.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
Ah, I see. Here we go. We're having show meetings on the air. As Kobe is correct, this is normally a second half segment, but you actually saw something.
Moving me up to prime time, huh?
The first half. He's starting.
Yeah.
But you also saw something new that opened last week, and as well as something you saw had a double feature at home last night. Mm. But I don't want to brag about this too much, but the 14-year-old hipster is still excited about seeing the Peanuts movie.
Oh, as well she should be.
And you got to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I am excited for it. There hasn't been a Peanuts motion picture in a long time. There was a great article in The Onion asking, do the Peanuts really need a motion picture? And they talked about how the transition from 30-minute specials to okay films. And it's in the fine tradition of Winnie the Pooh and other stories, Madeline also comes to mind, and Paddington, now we have a Peanuts movie.
Mm-hmm.
I was initially nervous because I kept hearing The Who and other pop songs in the trailers, and that made me nervous. Kobe, should I continue to be nervous? Are they going to commercialize? Is Snoopy going to wear sunglasses and have Bad to the Bone playing as he comes out of the doghouse? You said Back in Black.
No, yeah, Charlie Brown doesn't walk out of the house to kick a football and Back in Black's player.
Yeah, I don't. Please tell me that doesn't happen.
No.
Yes, it does happen, or no, it doesn't.
It does not happen.
Okay, thank God.
You should absolutely be excited about this movie. It is so much fun. It is not, story-wise, there's nothing new and groundbreaking, but if you're a fan of the old animated specials, especially Charlie Brown Christmas, they do some kind of callbacks. Most people, I think, are familiar with It's Christmas Time, Charlie Brown.
Hopefully.
So you'll recognize some of the lines and... In the Peanuts movie from that, the animation looks great. It's not modernized. You know, they're not... The gang isn't... singing hip hop songs.
Although, to be fair, whoever created the Peanuts kids dancing to "Hey Ya," that's kind of cute. But that's 4 minutes. It's not 80.
Yeah.
Is it episodic story? Episodic tales? Or is it one about just Charlie Brown trying to do the right thing?
No, it's just one linear, and then some Red Baron stuff happens.
Well, you gotta have that.
Yeah.
I bet that's probably the 3D portion of the show.
Probably, yeah. I didn't see it in 3D.
Don't really need to.
I don't feel like you really need to enjoy it.
Cool. Save the money.
Guaraldi music. Some original new music, classical stuff. It's not overlaid with a ton of pop songs. Meghan Trainor has a new original tune for it that's really good.
That's fine. If Zooey Deschanel can do music for Winnie the Pooh, I'm okay with that.
And there's a Flo Rida song, which I don't even remember hearing in it.
Maybe it's in the credits.
It's on the soundtrack. I don't even know.
Fine. If it's in the credits, I can. Let's go this way. Leave.
It was not. If it was in the movie. I didn't know it wasn't jarring. It's not something that feels out of place. It's not Alvin and the Chipmunks singing "Baby Got Back."
And another one's coming out.
Yes, and saw the trailer for it, and that's what happens. They sing "Baby Got Back," and it's hilarious. Because
no, it's not.
No,
it's no. Not. I'm afraid we're going to say here at Film Sociology we say it's not ready.
No, I'm in a different folder here.
Okay, sorry. All right, listen, here, I'll set it up again. Ladies and gentlemen, according to the trailer of Alvin and the Chipmunks, when Chipmunks sing "Baby Got Back," that's supposed to be hilarious. Here at Film Sociology, we have a different answer for that. It's...
No. That's not what I said.
That'll work too, Big Daddy. Also, for you music nerds, there's a cameo in the Peanuts movie by... Trombone Shorty.
Yes.
He does the grown-up voices with his trombone. That's got to be cool.
Yeah. I didn't know it until I'm watching the credits roll, and oh, my gosh.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, very cool.
It is so cool. I would go see it again.
Sosie Slagle Night. The five of us. Sorry, Frank. You have to stay home.
It's so good.
We'll have to work on that.
I can't wait for it to come in on DVD.
Cool. So, all right. So that's out there. So, yep. Ladies and gentlemen, there's an extended version of What Is Kobe Watching? Because he saw that in the theaters, and at the askings of Fair Sweet Bianca, you had a double feature last night.
Let's preface this by saying, looking ahead,
getting prepared,
coming in the holidays. Star Wars 7 is coming.
The Force Awakens, December 18th, the day before my birthday.
We should see that. We should watch the Star Wars movies.
This is caught up. This is Bianca, of course.
Yes.
Because if there's anybody who can imitate Bianca Slagle, it's Kobe Slagle.
Yeah. And that's a great Bianca voice. I sound just like her, right?
Right. It's like when
we should watch the Star Wars movies.
Kobe, we should see this. She doesn't sound like. Anyway.
So then it became, do you want to watch 4 through 6 or all 6? All 6. Matt doesn't have 1 through 3. Not
I don't.
Really necessary.
Because there's only 3 Star Wars films that matter, and it's Star Wars,
Empire Strikes Back,
and Return of the Jedi. Sorry.
So
the other two of the three are okay. It's fine. Anyway.
Two of the three are okay.
Okay, they're mediocre. One of the three
is okay. One is bad, and two is really bad.
But Tommy was so bad?
No.
Okay.
But
that's not what I said.
Kind of.
Okay.
Anyway. So, Matt Sosie graciously allowed us to borrow his Star Wars 4 through 6 box set.
And this is the one sadly, it's digital, because you cannot get the original on DVD. Mm-hmm. Thanks, George. So, all versions on DVD, Han shoots... second, not true, he shoots first, and no Hayden Christensen shows up at the end of Jedi in the little...
Yeah, I don't know why Han's not shooting Greedo first.
Oh, man. Someday, and I know people that have taken the original Star Wars, the untouched, untampered with VHS copies and converted them to DVD and Blu-ray, and I'm sure they're quality now. But I don't have those. Anyway, you watched the first two.
So yes, last night, let's watch Star Wars. We run.
Kobe,
Star
let's watch
Wars.
These.
I've seen all of them, but it'd been a long time since I'd seen the original three.
Maybe 5 or 6 years since I had seen A New Hope. Sorry, Star Wars.
Nobody calls it A New Hope.
Nobody calls it A New Hope.
Nobody calls it Episode 4.
No, so it had been a while since I had seen Star Wars. So we watched Star Wars. She has a hard time following it, because, as probably everybody in the world did when it came out in 1977 in the first 10-15 minutes when you have no idea what's going on.
As somebody who was actually in the theaters in 1977, and this sidetrack, this goes to, Kobe was asking earlier why they are listed that way as episode, well, of course there's the giant scroll at the beginning that's filling you in on what has happened.
I had assumed that they came out as Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi, and then in the 90s when they got remastered and they knew that they were going to be making prequels, I'd assumed that Lucas said, we're going to call those 4, 5, and 6, and the new ones are going to be 1, 2, and 3.
Nope.
No.
Nope. They were already like that to begin with. So, was this George Lucas's master plan? I don't know. I don't really care. But I think what they were doing, as I was explaining to Kobe, the first Star Wars was a throwback to the old serials. I mean, it like Flash Gordon and the Lone Ranger and Buck Rogers and all those, where you had 10-minute episodes every week. And that was a throwback to those old cliffhanger serials. So the fact is that you were dropped in the middle of a battle, because the film opens with the Force,
the Imperial cruisers.
Yeah, right. So you're already into a fight after you've read the scroll saying, "Well, this battle's been going on for a while." So you're just kind of just plopped into it. That's the reason for that, as opposed to having to do like 45 minutes of introducing they do it, it's just in a different way. So
you get there, it just takes a little bit.
Right. So anyway,
everything comes together eventually.
So you're plopped in the middle of a battle and then you meet characters and by the end you're hopefully hooked. And then of course that for many people say that was the beginning of the blockbuster era as we know it. Jaws and The Exorcist would like a word with you. but yeah, and then the movie industry forever changed. And also the fact that before that, sci-fi movie, and with the exception of 2001 as well, sci-fi movies were kind of cheap, mystery science theater, B movie looking stuff with Star Trek and plastic rocks and all that. But there was some technology, there was some skill, and it really elevated the sci-fi genre. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so you get done with the first one.
So we get done with the first one. Bianca, what'd you think? She starts laughing. You didn't like it. Why didn't you like it? Doesn't get it. Not her kind of movie.
I know that.
Yes. Yeah.
I saw a movie last night that is totally up Bianca's alley. Can't wait for you to see Brooklyn. Yes.
Not really my thing. Pose the question, do you want to continue on with Empire, or do you want to watch the Family Guy parody of what we just saw?
Good choice, by the way, sir.
So we continued with Empire Strikes Back, and it had been it's probably been close to 20 years since I had seen Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
Around that time. 18, 19, 20 years since I'd seen Empire.
Thank you, Lawrence Kasdan, for the screenplay.
So I was anxious to kind of see if the success of Star Wars kind of propelled future productions into better value, better cinematography, better sets, better script, better, everything.
Yeah. Yes, 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 and yes.
That did. Very cool. She liked it better. She thought it was mean when Vader cut off Luke's hand.
That's a direct quote.
Yes.
That's mean.
Also shocked, out loud shocked gasp when Obi-Wan was killed.
Really?
10-20 minutes into the first one.
Wow. I like that.
That's it? He's gone? Yeah.
But his presence looms throughout all the series, and he comes back as Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Look at that. So she liked the second one.
Yeah, I liked the second one, so now we have to watch Return of the Jedi. Probably get
bunch as Dante and Randall have observed, bunch of Muppets. Mm-hmm. So, well, wow. And of course, who had the best hair in Empire? Lando Calrissian.
Yeah.
You have to show her the scene in Chasing Amy that discusses Jedi, Star Wars, and race. And yeah, and those who know that, you know the scene I'm talking about at the comic book convention with the militant African-American comic book writer. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's Kevin Smith getting to make fun of race and Star Wars. So yeah.
Some questions arose.
You wrote these down too.
Yes.
Now, do you say you save the questions for the end of the movie, right?
Try
not to pause.
Well, I tried to explain kind of as things were going on what I knew of.
Honey, what's going on here?
But this was all stuff that happened in Star Wars,
right?
Does Vader not know that Leia is his daughter?
Yeah, but he's a villain. He doesn't care.
Why doesn't Obi-Wan tell Luke the truth about Vader?
So we can.
Is he protecting him?
Yeah, so we can build. He can grow.
And then why?
You know what he's doing? He's growing the man.
Yeah. He's growing the Jedi.
Growing the Jedi.
Okay, so then along those lines, why does Obi-Wan let Vader kill him?
Sacrifice. Sacrifice has been one of the most symbolic things in the history of drama. You know who the biggest sacrifice was? We won't get into that. Way back when. You know what? Obi-Wan died for your sins. I can't wait for your hate mail. Thank you.
And then, not really related, well, kind of, because the Death Star gets blown up. But where does Emperor Palpatine live? If the Death Star gets blown up and Vader gets thrown around in the TIE fighter spinning out into outer space, where's Emperor?
He takes it to a Meineke and gets it. You know, I'm assuming there is that Death Star also has a summer star. You know, he hangs. It's a safe house.
It's in the Naboo galaxy.
Right.
It's a nicer place.
Before we went on the air, Kobe had seen the Eddie Izzard stand up routine of the Death Star canteen, which we can't play on the air. But and of course, Clerks brings up the fact that when the Death Star is destroyed for the second time, innocent contract workers are all murdered. You know, blood that was spilled, and as they were just trying to do their job. So, good questions, Cobe. And sometime we should just have Bianca on, and Dr. Soci, film therapist, will answer all of her movie questions. We will do. I think you'll have to bring this up to your lovely wife. By the way, I emailed her the trailer for Brooklyn.
Oh, thank you for that.
You're welcome. She wants to take her mother to it. I think we're gonna have to do a whole show of that. Dr. Soci,
writing them down.
Bianca, start writing them down.
Make a list
and check them twice, and Dr. Soci will answer all of your questions.
We'll get to each one.
This might be the show we might have to record for the holidays.
Oh, that'd be a great holiday show.
All right. So welcome to the program meeting during the show. Cool. And I was speaking of your alma mater. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we haven't gotten to it yet, Kobe. I was at your alma mater this week.
Oh, no way.
I was at IU along with my lovely family, not only seeing a couple of my former acting students, but we went to see the musical Sweet Charity, which you should probably watch sometime with her, the Bob Fosse musical starring Shirley MacLaine.
Cool.
So what is happening at your alma mater?
Tonight, 7 p.m., Ben-Hur, A Tale of the Christ, 1925.
Oh, the silent movie one, not the Charlton Heston version.
With a live accompaniment.
Oh, cool. Who's playing?
Probably music school kids, I'm guessing.
Duh.
Oh, we'll come back to that.
What is that, Kronos?
Come back to that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not that.
That'd be cool.
Saturday, November 14th, 3 p.m. in the Sinatra at 100 series. Ooh. At IU Cinema from 1955, The Man with the Golden Arm.
Excellent film. Slightly dated about drug addiction, but yeah, he plays a jazz musician who's trying to get off the smack.
7 o'clock. Comedy drama from this year, The Forbidden Room.
Not The Room, and not Room.
The Forbidden Room.
And it's not on Forbidden Planet.
No.
Okay.
And then Monday, November 16th, 7 o'clock, Norma Rae.
Ooh, Sally Field with her first Oscar, directed by Martin Ritt. And she forms a union at her textile factory in the South.
There you go.
Very cool.
At the Historic Art Craft Theater.
Uh-huh.
Tonight and tomorrow, there was a showing earlier today at 2, and there's one at 7:30 today and tomorrow.
Yes.
Guess who's coming to dinner?
Wow. Have you seen that?
I have not, but I have that. I think I have your copy of that.
Yeah, get cracking on that, Mr. Double Feature.
Yeah. Well,
but you have to be in the mood for it. How about a film about late 60s race relations that's kind of safe with Sidney Poitier, Catherine Hepburn, and Spencer Tracy? What about Jackie Brown? Nah, I got to be in the mood for that. No, it is, of course, the daughter of Spencer and Kate, because I know them, bring home her husband, and it's a doctor played by Sidney Poitier. The actress, the young lady who's the actress in that, was actually Hepburn's niece in real life. Great performance by all four of them. And, of course, this was Spencer Tracy's final performance and a great swan song. He's got a wonderful monologue at the end of the film. I can't remember. He died, like, I think a week or a couple weeks after filming. But anyway, you should definitely check that out. That's a good one. Heading at your at the Art Craft.
At the Art Craft.
And you can watch it at home.
And looking ahead at the Art Craft, Christmas season, Christmas movies, November 27th to 28th, they've got Elf, December 4th and 5th and 6th, Christmas Story, 11th, 12th, and 13th, White Christmas, 18, 19, 20, Christmas Vacation.
Alrighty, so there. Head down to the historic Art Craft Theater and check that out. Hey, a little movie news to get to before we get to the other items. But you heard that Universal had a really good year with Furious 7 and Jurassic World, and so they had a really strong summer. Not the best fall because two of their films were pulled from theaters because of poor attendance.
Ooh.
One unfairly, it's a shame, the film Steve Jobs, with Michael Fassbender. Yeah. Which kind of really bums me out because I really liked it. And I know this is the second biopic on Steve Jobs. Thanks for nothing, Ashton. And there was already a documentary earlier this year. And apparently people were just tired of seeing films about Steve Jobs. So that's a shame because it's directed by Danny Boyle and is written by Aaron Sorkin. And it's really well done. But the other one was the film Gem and the Holograms, which as I was told by my good friend Sarah Froelke, who was a huge Gem freak in the 80s, men working on a film they know nothing about. They know nothing about the history of it. It was suggested maybe a female should have directed it. And the fact that it just alienated the audience it was gearing toward, which were kids from the 80s. But yeah, also got pulled because and the fact that this was a news item, those two got pulled. One's a shame. The other, I haven't seen, and I don't know if I'm going to see it. So anyway, there's some news there. What do you got on the board there?
Skyline is still up and running. Skyline
cool.
Drive-In.
Use the heater. It's okay.
6:45 this weekend. We have a triple feature.
Uh-huh.
Peanuts movie.
Yes.
Followed by The Iron Giant.
Ooh, great. Have you ever seen The Iron Giant?
I have not.
It's a really wonderful animated film. Brad Bird and fine voice performance by Vin Diesel.
Really?
Yeah. He plays the title character.
Oh.
Quite good. Yeah. Again, two of my favorite performances of him are The Iron Giant and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Did not know that.
Yep.
And then at 10:15, The Martian.
Okay. You know what? That's a building triple feature because you go from animated to animated, and then you go from sort of fantasy to sci-fi.
Yeah.
That works. Way to go, Drive-In.
So there's that.
Nice.
And then also, looking ahead, next weekend, November 20th and 21st at the IMA, the Internet Cat Video Festival.
Frank's excited.
I am so there.
Can and you bring then, your pets there?
Oh, man.
Why don't you do that, Frank? Damn.
I wish you could, but I feel like that would just be a disaster.
Or they could just film that and make it awesome.
And then it looks like they've also, the IMA, have announced their Winter Nights series.
Uh-oh. And?
January 8th, Hoosiers.
Of course.
15th, The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Which version? Oh, the Hitchcock one.
Yes.
Jimmy Stewart and Doris Day. Okay.
22nd, Miracle.
Ooh, cool. Enjoy that.
29th, I don't know this one, Control, featuring Unknown Pleasures. Looks like a music doc.
Okay.
Or a performance concert.
I'll look at that during the break.
February 5th, The Magnificent Seven.
You've never seen that?
Nope.
You would. I think you would dig that.
Probably.
Yep.
February 5th, Doctor Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
Fantastic. One of our crew members on The Exonerated, who she's, I believe, a freshman or sophomore, just recently watched Doctor Strangelove with her dad. So, kudos.
February 19th, Boys in the Hood.
Oh, cool.
Yep. And then February 26th, rounding it out, Princess Mononoke.
Princess Mononoke. That's a Studio Ghibli Miyazaki film. Emma wants to go to that. So
there you go.
Very cool. Very cool. By the way, I saw Boys in the Hood when it came out in theaters. Did not get shot. So just, you know, relax, suburbanites.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? Let's take a short break, and then I'll bring up the films that opened in theaters this weekend, none of which I saw. We have Dead People We Like, and then we have a news item that Jill Dittmeyer here at WFYI News interviewed musician Brendan Meeks, who has a role in the upcoming film of Miles Davis. So stick around. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
From Latin Delight and Simply Delicioso, you are listening to Film Sociology, WFYI in Indianapolis.
Thanks, Hola! Ingrid. Thanks, Ingrid. I just saw Ingrid on Food Network last week.
Cool.
There's a show called Barbecue Blitz, which is hosted by the gentleman who won Food Network Star this year.
Oh, yeah.
And it was this year, this particular episode was set in Miami, and Ingrid was one of the judges.
Cool.
So always good to see Film Sociology guest Ingrid Hoffman on TV. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Matthew Sosi hanging out with Kobe Slagle. We're kind of just catching up on movies the last couple of weeks. Kobe is on a film-watching streak.
He's seen three this week.
He's got momentum and fire and passion.
Yeah, momentum going into the weekend.
That's right. So, Kobe, you better get Archer queued up, because I should mention the films that did open in theaters this weekend, and because that's only fair. Speaking of, you mentioned Hoosiers, which is going to be January 8th at the IMA. But the latest film from Angelo Pizzo opened this weekend, My All-American. That's the one based on a true story. Football player becomes hero. Aaron Eckhart is in it. And anyway, that's opening in theaters right now. Love the Coopers, which is the obligatory big ensemble Christmas comedy with the likes of John Goodman and Diane Keaton, Amanda Siegfried, and the voice of Steve Martin, among others. Can't wait to read Ed Johnson-Ott's review of that in Nuvo. But here you go, Kobe. Well, we have the 33, which is the story of the Chilean miners trapped underground. Antonio Banderas, Julia Pinoche, Gabriel Byrne. I thought of your lovely wife, Kobe, with these. One is the one is the film Labyrinth of Lies, which is set in Germany after World War II.
Nope.
And it's about a young public prosecutor who is going to bring people to bring SS members who served at Auschwitz to trial to court. And then the other one, it's Carey Mulligan, Meryl Streep, and Helena Bonham Carter in Suffragette, which is about English women who are fighting for the rights to vote.
Nope.
Your lovely wife and your lovely mother-in-law will go see these for you. But yes, I've been told by Kobe when I start a film description with it's set in, then Archer pops up.
Nope.
Or Lana. So anyway, those are opening in theaters this week. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, the first Judd Apatow film, not written by Judd Apatow. It's written by Amy Schumer, and she's also starring in it. Trainwreck. You have not seen this.
I have not seen this. Bianca saw this with a friend, and friend liked it. Bianca, not so much.
I see. This is one that my family saw before me. I was like, wow, thanks. And good, not great.
It's flawed.
Like every Judd Apatow film is. This film is 2 hours and 4 minutes. It has no business. No Judd Apatow film needs to be 2 hours. I'm sorry, but it is an amusing take on the role reversal as far as the rom com, mm-hmm. because in this time, of course, Amy Schumer is the woman who is the character who has the commitment issues and likes to hop from bed to bed, and then she meets the perfect guy. An athlete, a doctor to mega athletes, played by Bill Hader. Hader, always fun. And they have some nice chemistry together. Alison Brie, who we talked about earlier in Room, plays her sister. There's a myriad of cameos, including Colin Quinn, who plays the dad who had commitment issues to begin with, and that's where the daughter inherits it. Tilda Swinton is in this. And the two people that made me laugh out loud, surprisingly, John Cena, who plays Schumer's boyfriend at the beginning, a muscle-bound lunkhead who mm-hmm. just doesn't. And there's a scene that's been talked about where she wants him to talk dirty to her while they're having sex, and he cannot. He's just saying all of the wrong things. And playing the role of the romantic comedy sidekick character, LeBron James.
I would like to see this simply for LeBron's parts.
Which I'm sure you shouldn't really look at online. You should experience the piece of art as a whole, even if it is too long and flawed. that was really entertaining, and I know there's rumors that they're gonna do a sequel to Space Jam with LeBron. I really hope it doesn't happen. Just because you have a great supporting role in one comedy does not mean you can have a starring role in a major film. And plus, I think he's got other priorities at the moment.
Yeah.
Got to win one in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Got to do that. Also, cameos by Amari Stoudemire, Tony Romo, Matthew Broderick. I think because he was down the street or he's friends with Judd Apatow, as well as Marv Albert. Yeah. And so the things you expect from a traditional romantic comedy are there. Of course, they are R-rated because it's Judd Apatow and Amy's writing it. She, of course, works at a romantic comedy magazine, because if they don't write for a magazine or a newspaper, they, of course, work for a publishing company or something like that. Tilda Swinton, of course, is the very bossy boss, Miss Bossy Pants. And so I'm like, stuff that happened at work could have been cut. Stuff involving the dad could have been cut. But then again, if they're cut, then you're not going to get known actors to really take those roles. So I understand that. But a great moment, which happens at the end, it is the without giving away too much of a romantic comedy, the big encounter between Amy and Bill happens at Madison Square Garden. So there's a big buildup. And this is something that could have been just sliced in half, but it keeps going. So when you see this, Kobe, and you will, you should check it out. But you'll see where, yeah, they could have sliced here, they could have sliced there. Hmm. So, yeah, it's a rental. It's not hella bad. So there you go. That's out there. All right. You know what? Let's do the Brendan Meeks.
Talk to Brandon.
Yeah. So earlier this week, last week I should say, Jill Dittmeyer spoke with local musician Brendan Meeks. Don Cheadle has directed and starred in a biopic about Miles Davis called Miles Ahead, and Brendan Meeks is in the film. He gets to play Ron Carter. Not bad at all. So here,
no.
You know what? Well,
that's pretty good.
You know what? This is what we call good company. Yeah. So anyway, here's Jill Dittmeyer's interview with Brendan Meeks.
A new film on Miles Davis called Miles Ahead premiered just a few weeks ago at the New York Film Festival. It's created and stars Don Cheadle, the actor, and also a local Indianapolis jazz bassist, Brendan Meeks, who joins us live in studio this afternoon. Welcome, Brendan.
Oh, thanks, Gio.
And many of you probably recognize Brendan. He's part of Native Son, which is one of our small studio session bands that we featured here on our WFYI.org website as well. But you got to play Ron Carter, one of Miles Davis's bassists.
Right. That's correct.
And how did you get involved with the picture to start with?
I heard of an audition that they were doing very early in the planning of the film. And there's some friends I have over in Cincinnati, Ohio, that I routinely play with. And they were telling me about this audition. And I kind of just decided to go on a whim. I really had no idea that I would get the part, but I just thought it would be fun to just go and try out. And lo and behold, they gave me a call back. Totally surprised.
And then, so you spent several days in New York City where they filmed the movie, because that's where Cheadle really believes that that's where Miles Davis really made it. I mean, really started his whole thing.
Well, actually, the setting of the movie is New York City, but they filmed it in Cincinnati.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Because they felt like Cincinnati looked more like New York in the 50s than
that's always
New York
the way it is, isn't it?
Right.
And you said, but this movie is really kind of a story within a story.
That's correct. It's really historical fiction. It's definitely not anything like the other biopics that you'll see, like Ray or What's Love Got to Do with It. It really creates a story about Miles Davis within the context of his actual history, but instead of like trying to deal with everything that he did, because it's so extensive, I don't think they could really get it into a 2-hour movie. So they kind of created a story it's a really good, compelling story about Miles, and he's going through a battle with his record label, and they kind of really delve into his personality that way. But it's totally different than anything you would expect from this kind of movie, and I think it was really smart the way they played that.
What did you learn from it in two ways? One, being part of a film as a musician, mm-hmm. How was it similar or different than when you go and play at a venue?
Oh, it was an entirely different animal. When we go in as musicians, when we go and play at a venue, especially when we're doing jazz, you have the chance to kind of just be in the moment and just create as you go. With being on set, you know, everything is scripted, and they have to do everything over and over again to get it right. And so there's a lot of waiting involved, and there's a lot more repetition involved than just performing, because you have to, you have to stand a certain way. They have to make sure you look right in a certain lighting. It's really a lot more detailed oriented, things that you normally don't even think about just performing. But to create an authentic look on a camera, they have to do so many things behind the camera to get it to look the way that it's supposed to. So it was a totally new experience for me. I'm really glad I got to do it.
And how do you feel differently about Miles Davis now?
I feel like almost kind of like I've actually had a chance to play with Miles in a way, because Don Cheadle, he did such an overwhelmingly good job with just bringing that character back to life. That, I mean, it was so surreal. I really, felt at times that I was working with Miles Davis, and not to mention that Don Cheadle can actually play trumpet.
That's incredible.
So, and he's really studied Miles' style. So it was a surreal experience. It really kind of just caused me to dig deeper into Miles's history and even learn more about him. Even though, you know, just playing jazz regularly, I kind of deal with
you
Miles'
knew a
music.
Little bit, yeah.
Yeah, but
the movie is Miles Ahead. It should be in wide release next spring. And as we go out here, Native Son's going to be performing in Dayton in a couple of weeks. But we're going to be listening to a little bit of your new music here, Brandon. Give us a quick clip on what this is. And
sure. This piece is called Illusion. It's going to be on my upcoming jazz project. And I think I'm going to title it Illusion. It's just something I wrote just for some of the local musicians here, Rob Dixon, Steve Jones, Greg
Archery.
Some of
the jazz greats. Brandon Meeks, thanks for stopping by today.
Oh, you're welcome.
There you go, from WFYI News, Jill Dittmeyer. Thank you, Jill, for providing that. That was Jill Dittmeyer's interview with local jazz musician Brandon Meeks, who is playing Ron Carter in the Don Cheadle biopic of Miles Davis called Miles Ahead.
Man.
We were, ladies and gentlemen, Kobe and I were completely geeking out while this interview was being played.
See, okay, coming full circle here.
Yes.
We were talking about the Peanuts movie.
Yes.
I remember, I want to say it was this time last year. Maybe it was a little bit later in the year. Maybe it was Christmas time. I don't know. But I remember seeing in theaters a cardboard cutout, you know, display thing.
Sure.
Snoopy's Doghouse.
Yeah, yeah.
And it said, you know, it just says coming 2015 or holidays, whatever it said.
Yep.
So I've been looking forward to the Peanuts movie for a year.
So congrats to the advertising department for that. Yeah.
And it was totally worth it. Totally paid off. I am as excited to see this, I think, as I was to see the
as Peanuts Miles Ahead. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think just seeing the pictures of Cheadle as Miles, and we've seen two.
Yeah.
There's one in a suit that looks like, you know, early 60s, and then one from the 70s with the frizzed out hair.
Yeah, there's Bebop Miles and there's Fusion Miles.
Yeah, back to the audience. Fuzz pedal, a foot fuzz pedal for your trumpet, thinking you're Sly Stone. Yeah, I'm really excited. And I know the film is currently in the film festival circuit. They are looking for a distributor. Jazz films are hard to promote. I get that. I'm hoping, because of the success of Whiplash, that somebody will pick this up. And it has been, Brendan's not the only one that I've heard say, this is not your standard biopic. This is not Ray or Walk the Line or What's the Love That Got to Do with It. Because as my buddy Laura Jansen says, I don't like biopics because they're movies about people. Because it has that generic biopic storyline, that story arc. And by the way, the story arc was destroyed in Walk Hard, starring John C. Reilly, and not enough people have seen this. They need to see that. Anyway, really excited about that. I'm trying to see if we can get Brandon himself on the show, since we could do like an entire hour.
That'd be cool.
Of jazz and jazz and cinema. Hi, Jared. We could do that more than once in a year. It's film sociology. Anyway, so yeah, be on the lookout for the biopic about Miles Davis, starring and directed by Don Cheadle, called Miles Ahead. Local musician Brendan Meeks playing Ron Carter. Let's never forget, in the 60s, Miles Davis, Ron Carter, Tony Williams, Herbie Hancock, and of course, occasionally, Wayne Shorter.
Yeah.
That's what we call not bad company at all.
No.
That's an all-star team right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, very, very cool. You know what? I'm going to ask this slowly so you can get it ready. Do you have Chris Lloyd?
Doing our the annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this
week. We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
Thank you. So I should just ask for things slowly so I don't throw you off.
We have that.
Good seeing Chris last night. Chris and I were sitting next to each other
Cool.
at the screening of Brooklyn, which you can hear a review of Brooklyn on Fresh Air tonight at 7 o'clock, or you go to freshair.npr.org. And as I said, I've already emailed the trailer to the movie to your lovely wife. She and her mom will be very excited about seeing it.
Okay.
Gunnar Hansen, actor Gunnar Hansen, died at the age of 68. You have not seen his work, Mr. Slagle, because he played the original Leatherface in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I have not seen his work.
You've seen his image.
Yes.
But anyway, this is this doesn't help on radio, but this is what he looked like in real life much later. So, Gentle Giant. But yeah, the immortalized. Yeah, his first film is Leatherface in 1974's Tobey Hooper drive-in classic, horror classic. Would later appear in films like The Demon Lover, 1977, Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers in 1988, Campfire Tales, Mosquito, Freak Show, Exploding Angel, Hatred of a Minute, Hellblock 13, Rachel's Attic. Oh, Chainsaw Sally. Is this like where, you know, anytime there was a movie with a motorcycle, you could expect a cameo by Peter Fonda? If you have a movie with Chainsaw in the title, call Gunnar Hansen. But anyway, Hansen also wrote a biography about the experience of working on Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which was a really good read. So anyway, thank you, Gunnar. You've scared the hell out of people for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked earlier, we started the show with music by Alan Toussaint, the great New Orleans writer, producer, and musician who died at the age of 78. And his music, my gosh, if you don't have any of his stuff, you really should. And I was going through, he appeared in two films as an actor, one of which I forgot he was in, but he did. He was the proprietor in the great 1997 Southern noir, Eve's Bayou. And then he played in the 2013 film Queen City as Piano Man. Take that, Mr. Joel. But it should also be noted that, and I put it on my Facebook page. We'll have to find it. But he, Alan Toussaint, also did the score to the 1974 blaxploitation film Black Samson. Yes, I have this on DVD. So, anyway, but his film, his music has appeared in numerous films, including... Well, he wrote, of course, the song Southern Nights, which was famously covered by Glen Campbell. That's in Convoy. He wrote Working in a Coal Mine, which was originally done. Oh, God, I forgot who did it. But there's a version of it by Devo in heavy metal. Film music, of course, appeared in End of the Line, A Decent Proposal, Casino. The original version of Working in a Coal Mine was on there. And films like Sunday Driver, Shut Up and Sing, Employee of the Month, so on and so forth. But also, films, songs by Dr. John, you know, he wrote for everybody, from Dr. John, the Meters, to Irma Thomas, people like Van Morrison, Eric Clapton, Elvis Costello, Devo, have all, if you go to his All Music page, it's 67 pages long, between the stuff he recorded personally and the artists who have recorded his music. So, salute Alan Toussaint. And again, tomorrow night's Blues House Party is devoted almost entirely to the music of Alan Toussaint. What are you looking up there, sir?
George Barris.
Yes, the creator of the Batmobile.
Yep.
As well as the Green Hornets car.
The Munster Coach.
And the Munster Coach, that's right. See, Jim Mueller would be all over this.
Yep.
Yes, he would.
So he did something for the Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh gosh, that car with Granny's rocking chair up on top. Mm-hmm. Yep.
See, we got a Dodge Charger for Thunder Alley, a Plymouth Barracuda for Fireball 500.
Ooh.
Super Van.
Oh jeez. Man.
Mercury Station Wagon for the Silencers.
Mm-hmm.
And a Lincoln Continental Mark III for the car.
Oh god, that's a bad horror movie. That's James Brolin versus a killer car. How are we doing on time?
We got a minute and a half.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
AV Club asked the question, what movie would you like to see remade and by what director? We have such choices as Charade, directed by Steven Soderbergh, The Darjeeling Limited by Sarah Polley. That would be interesting. A Beautiful Mind, done by Rebecca Miller. George Miller, who did Mad Max Fury Road, should do the Conan the Barbarian reboot. Gem and the Holograms, directed by Elizabeth Banks. Good call on that. Battle Beyond the Stars by Edgar Wright. That would actually be fun. Forbidden Planet, directed by Guillermo del Toro. Okay, Bianca, this is for you. All of the Twilight films done by Sofia Coppola. Charlie's Angels Full Throttle by Jamie Babbitt, or as it says, should be the director to remake Full Throttle as the lesbian action film we all deserve. Sorry, Jamie. And Mission Impossible 2, directed by Steven Soderbergh. There you go. Words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. And go watch Star Wars if you need to catch up. You're listening to The Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We go. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.